The smoking cessation among young adults in Southeast Alaska. So if this is Alaska, right, there's the Aleutians, and Southeast Alaska is the part that is closest to British Columbia. And it's very coastal. It is largely Tlingit, Haida, Tsimshian. However, in this study, because Juneau is also the state capital and the third largest city in Alaska, there is a lot of in-migration as well. So in this study, we had people who had been born all over Alaska and were likely from different tribes. I want to take the time right now to thank all my collaborators. The work was funded by the Southeast Alaska Regional Health Consortium, which is known as SEARCH, and some of my collaborators were on staff there in the tobacco department, Andrea Thomas and Edie Rodewald. This was part of my PhD dissertation, for which Dr. Lopez was my primary chair, and I had people on my committee from also University of Alaska Anchorage and also from the University of South Florida. So thank you to all my collaborators. Much to my husband's chagrin, I have no relationships to disclose. So. Our overarching goal here was to reduce the smoking rates for young adult beneficiaries in the Southeast Alaska region, and you'll see the disparities later. Our goal was to decide if we should modify the in-place tobacco cessation program or not, and also to be able to develop a research protocol that could be reused outside the relatively urban environment of Juneau in the more remote areas where SEARCH beneficiaries lived. We had a two-phase design. The first phase was very small, just six interviews, and it really was only to inform the methods of the phase two. It was strictly qualitative research, and it was built on a foundation of social marketing, which is my personal passion and which I'll talk about later. This is not social media, but social marketing. You'll hear in a bit. We had seven research questions, and again, this is based on the social marketing foundation, where it's very important to understand the world through the eyes of the priority population that you're working with, not from your public health eyes, but from their eyes. And so we wanted to discover the benefits of smoking from their perspective, the benefits of quitting, the barriers to quitting smoking, and to understand how they quit, and to understand what kind of advertisements might work with them and what kind of quit aids might resonate with them. And then because we felt that we might be developing an intervention based on technology, this being young adults, we wanted to understand what their electronic communication habits were. And the two bubbles here in yellow are where we found differences between this population of young adults and other young adult or indigenous population studies. So I'll go into that when we get to results. To give you a context for the smoking rates in Alaska, they are similar to the U.S. as a whole, although they are slightly higher. So we are at about 20% overall smoking rates in Alaska among all adults. Among young adults, it's closer to 30, again, similar to the U.S. In the American Indian and Alaska Native population, however, we have 40% smoking rates across all age groups, as opposed to 30% in the U.S. as a whole. But in this population that we studied, there was a humongous disparity. 70% of young adults ages 19 through 29 of Southeast Alaska Natives smoke, and this is based on the BRFSS question, do you smoke someday or every day? So this included light or intermittent smokers as well as heavier smokers. But 70% in Alaska are smoking. So that was the disparity on which we based our research. And most of you probably know this. In terms of best practices in cessation, several government groups have gotten together and say there's four ways that work. One is brief counseling, which is like a 3-minute counseling in the middle of a medical appointment. Intensive counseling, which is outside the medical setting, can be delivered by a health professional or a social worker or tobacco health educator. Another thing that works is nicotine replacement therapy, you know, patches and gum and nasal sprays, and also prescription drugs. The drug of choice right now, you've heard probably on TV, is Chantix or varenicline, which is actually a psychological or psychiatric drug. So in the U.S. as a whole, two-thirds of all quit attempts are cold turkey. In other words, unaided quitting. People just quit. And the success rate is less than 5%. And people who use pharmaceuticals only, whether that's the nicotine replacement or the prescription drugs, account for about a quarter of all quit attempts. And research shows those are 2 to 6 times more effective than either a placebo or quitting cold turkey. Behavioral and pharmaceuticals as a combination is only 6% of quit attempts, and it actually only shows it's marginally more effective than NRT alone. And behavioral counseling only accounts for 2.5% of all quit attempts. So in the U.S., though, here's the actual context. So more than two-thirds of adult smokers express a wish to quit. And in that group, 43% of all smokers make a quit attempt every year. But it's really difficult. Success rates are in the single digits. Yet, and this just stopped me in my tracks when I discovered this, people are so optimistic about quitting. Even those that have more than 10 quit attempts believe their chances of quitting next time are 50-50. And on the good news, 51% of all smokers currently alive have actually quit. All of ever smokers have actually quit. So it does happen. It obviously takes tenacity, right? So in the current tribal tobacco cessation program is a combination of education, free quit aid products, whether that's NRT or prescription drugs, and then one-on-one support. And it represents all four best practices that we talked about. However, in the program in search, young adults are severely underrepresented. And in other words, most of their clients are not young adults. They're older people. So I talked about social marketing. And social marketing is a framework for building an intervention that uses marketing principles, actually commercial marketing principles, to influence a behavior change. And that behavior change is must be for individual and usually for society's good. What makes it different than many approaches to behavior change is that it's got strictly behavioral goals, and it's got a really deep consumer orientation. You've got to get in the skin of your priority population, understand the situation from their view. We always segment the audience, so we get the rather than doing like a shotgun approach, it's always a rifle approach, so that the audience has a very similar characteristics and needs. And it's also based very strongly on the notion of exchange, or the benefits, not just any kind of benefit, tangible or intangible, more than the cost. And costs include more than finance, but also like hassle and stress. And then we develop an intervention based on the, what's called the 4 P's, which I'll go into later. So I mentioned before our research design was two-phase. In phase one, we had 6 key informants. Phase two, we had 23 participants. 4 of those were individual interviews, and 5 were focus groups. And that answered the 7 research questions that were on that bubble chart a minute ago. So in our methods, we used largely referrals and same-day on-location recruiting. We found out in phase one that this group does not keep appointments. They will not agree to come, and they usually won't show up. It just is not the way they run their lives. So we did a lot of referrals and on-location recruiting. We did our interviews in a downtown setting, in a university setting, in a mall setting. And it gave us some it gave us a diversity of participants. Our incentive was a $30 iTunes gift card, which was very, very well received. And we used visual aids like examples of advertisements and examples of programs. And we used standard qualitative data analysis techniques. I won't go into the whole demographics here, but it was a little more heavily male than female. 14 of the 23 participants were married or living with a partner, and 6 of them had children in their home. And 9 of them were former smokers, 8 were intermittent smokers, and 6 were everyday smokers. Chewing tobacco is not really an issue in this population. The rates of chewing tobacco are about 4%, which is the state average. It's very different in other parts of Alaska, but in southeast Alaska, chewing is not so much an issue. So what did we find? We found out from their perspective the benefits of smoking were stress and boredom relief and just plain old oral satisfaction. One young father talked about it being anger management, and another one talked about when you exhale the smoke, it's like your problems are actually gone, although he did admit it was a temporary fix for the stressors in his life. In terms of the benefits of quitting, very heavy emphasis on the immediate health effects. They felt like they didn't have the stamina, running for the bus, being in the gym, doing subsistence activities. And I had 2 young men talk about its impact on their sexual stamina. There was also a noted emphasis. Excuse me. Can you pass my water? Excuse me. There was a very strong emphasis of my quitting will have a positive impact on the children in my life. And it was beyond their own children because there were only 6 that had their own. But they talked a lot about their nieces and nephews and their obligation as role model. There was very little concern for the expense of smoking, which surprised my tribal colleagues. But if you look at the intermittent nature and light nature of their smoking, that perhaps could be it. At the time we did this research, cigarettes were $9 a pack in Juneau. I know. $9 a pack. Alaska has really good tobacco tax. So the barriers to quitting, why they didn't find it quitting, a lot of them likened it to alcoholism and other drug-related addictions. And there was a lot of social norms thing, particularly parents, grandparents, aunties who smoked, and they felt, also their peers who smoked. So that was what made it hard to quit for them. In terms of their experience with quitting, similar to the numbers I showed you earlier, very strong preference for cold turkey. And they relied on the success of other people they knew, particularly their elders. And there was one comment, this lower right in yellow, which was just a really revealing comment. This young woman said, I think, yeah, the counseling program would help some people. But since I've done it on my own so many times, I don't think I would use the program. And there was not a single trace of irony in her voice when she said this. The definition of success in this population is apparently that it lasts for some amount of time, but that it's not a forever quit. NRT, the patches and gum, have very bad reputation. Some of it was firsthand, but a lot of it was hearsay. My friends had nightmares. They got nauseous. It tasted terrible. The gum tasted terrible. And there was almost no experience with the prescription drug. In terms of their experience with quitting methods, when I talked about the counseling that was part of the current search offering, the tribal offering, it was amazing the negative reaction I got on that. They said, this is crazy, you don't need counseling, that's for alcohol and drugs, smoking, you just don't need this, it feels like an AA meeting. And yet, of the few people in this group that did use the QUIT program, they were so impressed with it and felt that it was a wonderful experience. But a remarkable number of these young adults had never heard that the tribal group had a cessation program, actually. So what we found that was different from the literature, there was little or no emphasis on social connection. In the literature, you see a lot of things, well, I smoke to fit in. Nobody actually explicitly said that in this study, although obviously there was the social norm thing going on. The emphasis on short-term health benefits was different from the literature. This extreme emphasis on smelling, I don't want to smell bad, I don't want to have yellow teeth, was different from the literature. And especially the impact on the extended family was very different from both the indigenous and the young adult literature. The barriers to quitting were similar to the literature. This group showed absolutely no interest in learning more about pharmacotherapy, which was different from the indigenous literature and the young adult literature. And in terms of their attitude towards counter-marketing, we showed them some like fear ads, you know, that CDC tips from former smokers you may have seen on television that shows the people severely disfigured from smoking. They did say that that resonated with them, but they thought it was too gross and that it shouldn't be shown. But they did say, a lot of them said that advertisements don't really impact me, which may or may not be true. So, we showed them a texting application that could help them quit smoking. Some people thought this was great. So you, it's offered by the CDC, and you sign up, you give a quit date, and then it will actually text you, say, how you doing today? And you can type in stress or slip, and then it'll give you back appropriate text. Some people thought that was wonderful. Some people thought it was so nagging and irritating that it would make them want to smoke. So, in terms of their e-communication habits, this group was really right in line with the U.S. Almost ubiquitous cell phone ownership, although not all smartphones. Heavy use of texting, heavy use of mobile Facebook, and almost no relationship with the internet in what people of my age have. They don't do email. They don't do searches on a laptop or desk computer. They do everything on their phone. So we did accomplish our three goals, and we learned what might be modified in the program. So we built a recommendation for a social marketing program. We don't have that funded yet, but we want to target those who have already decided to quit smoking. In this sample, there were only two people that said they were not interested in quitting. We want them to see that seeking support from the tribal system was normal and simple and more effective. And the behavior change we're looking for is to have them enroll in the program rather than simply quitting cold turkey. And we want to, in our campaign, we want to emphasize the things that matter to them, the short-term benefits, the benefits to the extended family. We think we need to apply some other method of stress relief because these young people are living with a lot of stress. We definitely don't want to call it counseling, we're going to call it coaching, and we want to really make sure that they understand we're not going to force them to use the drugs or the NRT or the prescription drugs because they really have a strong aversion to that. We are going to, we are recommending that we incorporate a texting component. It's free, it's offered by the CDC, and because of their unwillingness to deal with appointments, we're going to recommend we do telephone contact. And so further, we have, SEARCH would like to conduct this research in maybe more of its remote locations. Some of the towns of 1,000 or 2,000 people, or even in the remote villages with a few to several hundred population. We are publicizing this inside Alaska and hoping to work and share this information with other tribal organizations. And what's really true, what we learned is that there's really a dearth of studies on young adults in general, and certainly on young adult Alaska Natives or American Indians. Out of 51 studies in the only meta-analysis I found, only four of them were not college student-based. Only four out of 51. And part of that, and Ellen and I can attest to this, part of that is because it's really hard to recruit people who are not on the college campus. So we found notable similarities and notable differences. We are hoping to make practical use of our findings, and we feel that we've made a contribution to the literature. Those are my references. Any questions, which I guess we'll hold for later. Yeah, thank you.